Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1366. Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, Part 1. This is being recorded on December 21st of the year 2024. Before getting into the main body of the program, let me encourage you emphatically to get the latest flash drive. It is 64 gigabytes because we've just had too much information for 32 gigabytes. It is in the process of being put together, that the length of time will simply permit more programs to be included on it, including the two we're going to do today. That flash drive also contains a mini library of old anti-fascist books, easy-to-download PDF files. It contains all of my work, both broadcast and written, the brilliant articles by Parafractal that he's contributed over the years, and the talks with Monty and many other things as well. I get no money whatsoever from this. This is my entire life's work, and I am in my 46th year on the air. So we will begin by, again, I can't encourage people strongly enough to get that flash drive. I am very pessimistic about the future, and that will perhaps permit you or somebody of your choice to at least access what happened to our civilization, because I couldn't be more pessimistic, and I get even more pessimistic by the day. Now, we're going to begin by taking a look at the influence of Peter Thiel on the Trump White House. Peter Thiel is a very important individual, as important as he is, in my opinion, sinister. We spoke about him beginning in, For the Record, 718. His family comes from Frankfurt, Germany. His father was a chemical engineer, and that strongly suggests that he worked for one of the companies coming out of IG Farben. His father worked on the apartheid South Africa atomic bomb. Peter Thiel is a defender of apartheid, does not feel that democracy works because it is inimical to wealth creation. He also doesn't think women should be allowed to vote. And his top political reference point, perhaps, is a fellow named Carl Schmitt, S-C-H-M-I-T-T, who was the Third Reich's top legal theoretician. That is, perhaps, in the context of the Third Reich, the ultimate oxymoron. Peter Thiel founded the Palantir firm, which managed Operation Warp Speed for Donald Trump, and he is an individual whose influence could not be exaggerated. He was the driving force behind Facebook and part of the original PayPal mafia. This article is called How Peter Thiel's Network of Right-Wing Techies is Infiltrating Donald Trump's White House. The story is by Jessica Matthews. It is an MSN.com story, and it dates from 2024. I'll have the exact date in the written description for the program. The article reads, "It was PayPal co-founder and venture capitalist Peter Thiel who introduced his mentee, J.D. Vance, to President-elect Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago in 2021. 3 years later, with Trump and Vance just weeks away from the White House, it is Thiel who is sitting privy, as many people within his network head for official or advisory positions in the next administration. David Sacks, S-A-C-K-S, who worked with Thiel at PayPal and wrote for the Stanford Review, the student newspaper Thiel founded as an undergraduate at Stanford University in 1987, was named as the White House's incoming, quote, AI and crypto czar, unquote, on Wednesday. Jim O'Neill, former CEO of Thiel's personal foundation, has been picked as Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. Elon Musk, whose financial and vocal support helped elect Trump, will be running the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Musk have worked closely with Thiel at PayPal, and Thiel's venture fund, Founders Fund, was an early investor in several of Musk's companies, including space cargo business SpaceX, tunneling firm The Boring Company, B-O-R-I-N-G, and brain chip startup Neuralink. Trey Stevens of TRAE, last name capital STEPAVNS, a general partner at Founders Fund, is reportedly being considered for Deputy Secretary of Defense, according to the Wall Street Journal. And Michael Kratsios, K-R-A-T-S-I-O-S, Peel Capital's former chief of staff and a director at Founders Fund-backed Scale AI, is reportedly handling tech policy during the Trump transition. Then, of course, there is Vance, who worked for Peel at one of his funds, Mitrioil Capital, that's capital M-I-T-H-O-I-L, then launched a venture fund that Peel-backed. Founders Fund still lists Vance's venture firm, Naraya Capital, capital N-A-R-Y-A, as a, quote, affiliate, unquote, on regulatory filings. All of these individuals, including the vice president-elect, sit within powerful Silicon Valley networks, one man at their center, Peel. There's the PayPal Mafia, the group of early employees of the digital payments company that includes both Peel and Musk. There's the conservative student newspaper, the Stanford Review. There's Founders Fund, the $12 billion venture capital firm that has invested in the major startups working most closely with the U.S. Department of Defense, SpaceX, Palantir, and Anduril, spelled with A-N-D-U-R-I-L. Sounds like a drug, doesn't it? I mean, like a pharmaceutical product. Continuing. And then there's also Peel's personal endeavors like his family office, foundation, or other funds. Trump pulled people from these same networks during his first presidency when Peel was the sole voice of Trump's support in Silicon Valley, donating more than $1 million and speaking at the Republican National Convention in 2016. During that first administration, Trump selected Ken Howery, capital H-O-W-E-R-Y, a Stanford Review and PayPal alum as the ambassador to Sweden. Howery was also reportedly at Mar-a-Lago during the 2024 election night. Trump also appointed Kratsios, Peel Capital's former chief of staff, as the White House deputy chief of technology officer, and Mark Woolway, W-O-O-L-W-A-Y, who was an early employee at PayPal and now works at Saks Craft Ventures, was on Trump's transition team for the Treasury Department in 2016. While Peel still describes himself as pro-Trump, he's taken a step back compared with previous election cycles. And I'll have the entire article in the written description for the program. Again, due to the limitations of time, those are the key areas. But there's more. This is from a conservative blog. It is sonar21.com by the quote ex-unquote CIA officer Larry Johnson. He is pro-Trump, has a lot of BS in this column, but he also has a lot of good stuff too. And there is a very interesting observation here. Now, Larry Johnson, as is his wont, has taken the allegation, I would put it, that the Chinese have hacked various U.S. military and intelligence phone communications at face value, as we will review the CIA's cyber weaponry enables them to do that and make the hack look like it comes from China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, or North Korea. But this particular blog from December 10th of 2024 is called Chinese Hack Means Beijing Reading and Hearing All U.S. Military and Intelligence Classified Communications. Again, this is by Larry Johnson on December 2024. Now, I'm not going to take time to talk about the, quote, hack, unquote, itself. Again, the entire article will be in the written description for the program. But I would note the following. Speaking of the hack, And before I read the hack, I'm going to read this. This is from April 3rd of 2017. That's from the Heavy blog by Stephanie Boob, B. Wilson, B-W-I-L-S-O-N. WikiLeaks Vault 7 Part 3 reveals CIA tool might mask hacks as Russian, Chinese, or Arabic. And it reads in part, these tools could make it more difficult for antivirus companies and forensic investigators to attribute hacks to the CIA. Could this call the source of previous hacks into question? It appears that, yes, this might be used to disguise the CIA's own hacks to appear as if they were Russian, Chinese, or from specific other countries. This might allow a malware creator to not only look like they were speaking in Russian or Chinese rather than in English, but to also look like they tried to hide what they were not, hide that they were not speaking English. More about that. It's not known exactly how this marble tool was actually used. However, according to WikiLeaks, the tool could make it more difficult for investigators and antivirus companies to attribute viruses and other hacking tools to the CIA. Test examples weren't just in English, but also Russian, Chinese, Korean, Arabic, and Farsi. This might allow a malware creator to not only look like they were speaking in Russian or Chinese rather than in English, but to also look like they tried to hide that they were not speaking English, according to WikiLeaks. This might also hide fake error messages or be used for other purposes. So, again, blindly attributing the hack to the Chinese is something I would not necessarily do. Maybe they did, but Chinese national security and intelligence methodology is quite conservative, and I don't think that they would necessarily try something like that, given that that would certainly be detected by the NSA, among other organizations. Now, speaking of, once again, the alleged Chinese hack, and going back to Larry Johnson's column, this is going to have an economic effect. Very negative for the telecommunications giants, who are likely to use profitable... One more time. This is going to have an economic effect. Very negative for the telecommunications giants, who are likely to lose profitable U.S. government contracts, and is lucrative for Elon Musk. Why Musk? His network of satellites handling classified communications, i.e. Starfield, is, I am told, seen by the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA, as the only solution to secure the compromised military and intelligence networks. Musk may be on his way to becoming the first trillion-dollar man. Now, again, with Peter Thiel being the top dog at Palantir and other firms, again, Palantir is the alpha predator of the electronic surveillance landscape, inextricably linked with the U.S. intelligence system, I would not deem it very difficult for CIA or someone related to that to perform a hack and make it look like it came from China. But who is going to be the beneficiary? One more time. This is lucrative for Elon Musk. Why Musk? His network of satellites handling classified communications, i.e. Starfield, is, I am told, seen by the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA, as the only solution to secure the compromised military and intelligence networks. Musk may be on his way to becoming the first trillion-dollar man. So, qui bono in this? That will be, drumroll fanfare, Elon Musk. Now, another of the people in the Peel orbit who is going to be benefiting from the current malaise, so to speak. And this is from MSN.com, and then I'll have the exact date in the written description for the program. This is a story by Natasha Piku, capital M-I-P-A-S-H-A, last name capital P-I-K-U. Fearful of crime, the tech elite transform their homes into military bunkers. In the future, your home will feel as safe from intruders as a state-of-the-art military base. Cameras and sensors surveil the perimeter, scanning bystanders' faces for potential threats, Films from a, quote, deterrence pod, unquote, scare off trespassers by projecting a searchlight over any suspicious movements. A virtual view of the home is rendered in 3D and updated in real time, just like a Tesla's digital display. Note that. And private security agents monitor alerts from a central hub. By incorporating technology developed for autonomous vehicles, robotics, and border security, Sauron, that's the organization, that's the name of the company, capital S-A-U-R-O-N, has built a supercharged burglar alarm, Hertz argued. Hertz is one of the principals. More about that later. He's the co-founder. The concept has resonated in Bay Area tech circles, where crime in San Francisco is a constant subject on tech podcasts, social media, and executive group chats. While statistics from the San Francisco Police Department from October show that property crime and car theft has dropped in 2024 and that the homicide rate sits at a five-year low, the data has done little to appease the public's fears. One more time. While statistics from the San Francisco Police Department from October show that property crime and car theft has dropped in 2024 and that the homicide rate sits at a five-year low, the data has done little to appease the public's fears. Continuing, last month, San Francisco elected a mayor who ran on a platform of enhancing public safety and passed a proposition allowing the police more leeway to surveil residents. Around the country, voters have responded to similar perceptions of danger by rolling back police reforms instituted during the George Floyd protests. This is the vision of home security pitched by Sauron, a Silicon Valley startup boasting a waiting list of tech CEOs and venture capitalists. Again, Sauron, S-A-U-R-O-N. Co-founder Kevin Hertz, a tech entrepreneur and former partner at Peter Thiel's venture firm Founders Fund, named the company after the villain in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, a disembodied evil spirit depicted as a fiery, all-seeing eye in the sky. Palantir, by the way, again, the alpha predator of the electronic surveillance landscape, is named after the seeing stones of Lord of the Rings. Finishing up, note that Kyle Kurtz is a former partner in Peel's Founders Fund. It's a little overt, a little tongue-in-cheek, unquote, but it sends the right message, Hart said. The bad people, they know they're being watched, unquote. Now, an interrogatory note. I'm not going to go into great length about this. But I was very, this was piqued by the assassination of the CEO of United Healthcare, whose name escapes me off the top of my head. I believe his name was Thompson. He, by the way, was being sued for something like $121 million inside sale of United Healthcare stock. But his assassination allegedly at the hands of Luigi Mangione is very interesting. Mangione is from himself a wealthy Baltimore family. He, in social posts, has admired, among others, not only Peter Thiel and Elon Musk, but also Theodore Kaczynski, the Unabomber. In a For the Record program that I will link, Theodore Kaczynski was one of the early victims, I would say, one of the early, quote, subjects, unquote, of the LSD experimentation and MK Ultra mind control programs at Harvard University. The Unabomber program, I think, needs to be viewed in against that background. Was he somehow influenced by that or programmed to do that? I don't know. As far as Luigi Mangione, he was apparently fairly stable and well-grounded. He then went black, basically, for about 6 months. He was living in Hawaii. He toured in Asia. Where he went and what he did when he basically he went black from a social media standpoint is, I think, something to look into. One of the things I would note is all of the understandable glee that was demonstrated. Emojis, for example, showed people laughing, gloating over the assassination. And the elevation of Mr. Mangione to a social hero is another thing. The anger that people are feeling toward the health system and United Healthcare in particular is altogether understandable. However, borrowing maybe this will seem corny as hell from Star Wars, if you go over to the dark side of the Force, if you let your fear and anger take possession of you, then you will wind up doing no good. But what struck me was the amount of online emojiing, the coined term, if influencer is a term, maybe emojier is a term, and the various online postings that were supportive of what Mr. Mangione allegedly did. With firms like Sauron proliferating and basically providing security to online, to high rollers, things like that can easily be data harvested, so to speak, or data mined, and turned over to the likes of Kevin Hart's and Sauron. Again, he's part of the Teal-verse. And I wonder about Mr. Mangione. It certainly was, Ted Cruz, I think it was, maybe it was Marco Rubio, but he said, this proves that leftism is a disease. I would not classify Luigi Mangione as a leftist, assuming he did what he's alleged to have done, but it is an interesting thing. That is maybe just what the ultra-wealthy and perhaps the Sauron firm, question mark, would love, because it basically identifies people who might be prone to that sort of thing, all of which is an advisory. When you are online, when you're using social media, whatever, you're in public. So watch yourself. You go, hey, wow, that was really cool when somebody gets killed. Be very careful about things like that, because you're data. You are in public when you are online. And from December 4th of this year, from 2024, by Kenneth Chang from the New York Times, Trump picks Jared Isaacman, ISAACMAN, an entrepreneur and private astronaut to lead NASA. Guess who he's associated with? President-elect Donald J. Trump will nominate Jared Isaacman, a billionaire entrepreneur who led two private missions to orbit on SpaceX rockets, as the next NASA administrator. Mr. Isaacman, the chief executive of the payment processing company Shift for Payments, is a close associate of Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, and if confirmed to the post by the Senate, would bring the perspective of an outsider to the space agency and its $25 billion budget. Outsider, my expert would believe that he's no bleeping outsider. One more time, Mr. Isaacman, the chief executive of the payment processing company Shift for Payments, is a close associate of Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, and if confirmed in the post by the Senate, would bring the perspective of an outsider to the space agency and its $25 billion budget. Outsider, huh? Doesn't look that way to me. He's part of the Peelverse, he's one of the Musk oxen, to coin a term, and it just shows the very tight little orbit, that the pun intended, that the Trump selections have. And speaking of Trump selections, a very interesting possible selection comes from also the New York Times on December 11th of 2024. This is by Julian E. Barnes and Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan. And guess who he is nominated, is to say Donald Trump, is considering for a deputy director of CIA. Amaryllis Fox Kennedy, a former CIA officer who was married to the son of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., raised alarms for publishing a book about her work at the agency without going through a review process. And that book was called Life Undercover, Coming of Age in the CIA. And this reads in part, President-elect Donald J. Trump is considering Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s brother-in-law to serve as the deputy director at the CIA, according to four people briefed on the matter. Amaryllis Fox Kennedy, 44, a former CIA officer, was married to Mr. Kennedy's son and met with Mr. Trump last week to discuss the job, the people said. The position does not require Senate confirmation, unlike the director job. And she also, by the way, was the manager of Robert F. Kennedy's campaign and the largest contributor to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s campaign. The largest contributor to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s campaign was Timothy Mellon, the scion of the Mellon family, the famous and very lucrative and I would say sinister Mellon family. And he also, Timothy Mellon, was also the biggest financial backer of Donald Trump as well. And it says here that she worked as her father-in-law's campaign manager. And supposedly she has raised alarms by people at the agency. We'll see what happens for that. A very interesting bit of networking here. And apparently she was being considered for CIA director at one point by, drum roll fanfare, Barack Obama. And so she's critical of the agency's post-9/11 emphasis on counterterrorism and asymmetrical warfare more generally, and wants to see a rebuilding of human intelligence gathering capacity in rival powers like China, Russia, and Iran, according to a person with knowledge of her thinking. In other words, she's a hardcore core warrior, and that is really nothing surprising. Note who she is networked with. Ms. Fox Kennedy is liked by a number of people in Mr. Trump's orbit, and she is close with Tulsi Gabbard, Mr. Trump's choice to serve as Director of National Intelligence. And she also loved that. She has been discussed for other jobs in the administration, including an ambassadorship, but she has wanted a role with the CIA for some time, according to one of the people briefed on the matter. Again, she is tight with Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard, I suspect, was the person who leaked information. She was the deputy chair head, number two at the Democratic National Committee. She resigned because she was a Bernie Sanders supporter. She also was being kicked around as Bernie Sanders' potential vice presidential candidate if, in fact, Never Never Land became true and Bernie Sanders got the nomination. And she also is a member of the Hare Krishna cult, as is her husband, as are both of her parents, as were her congressional staff. And she also is the point person, arguably, for the RSS. That is the Hindutva Fascist Party, that organization that was modeled after Mussolini's black shirts. It was the organization behind the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi. And Narendra Modi, his BJP, is a political cat's paw for the RSS, and Tulsi Gabbard was instrumental in arranging Mr. Modi's trips to the U.S. She was described in the Indian press as, quote, the Sangs, that's a short for RSS, the Sangs mascot in the United States. And again, the RSS, a Hindu fascist organization that is was modeled on Mussolini's black shirts. And again, that's talked about in For the Record program 988, 989, and 990. More. Ms. Fox Kennedy's ties to Ms. Gabbard will put someone trusted by an outspoken critic of the U.S. intelligence community and military in a pivotal position at the CIA. In late October, Ms. Fox Kennedy wrote on social media that she had known Ms. Gabbard for roughly a decade. By the way, and For the Record, 991, I talk about the views of the Hare Krishna cult. Let's just say that fascist would be a polite way of describing them. Tulsi Gabbard, as is generally the case of the so-called progressive sector, has been cited as a really good person to be Director of National Intelligence. They've done no homework about her. They don't Take a look at her ties to Narendra Modi and in India. And they don't take a look at her position with the Hare Krishna cult. And they won't look at much of anything else. They take a look at the fact that she was a supporter of Bernie Sanders. Again, Tulsi Gabbard would appear to be a wolf in sheep's clothing. She has been critical of the Ukraine war and also of our policy in Syria. A little bit about that perhaps later in the programs. But Tulsi Gabbard is anything but a quote, progressive, unquote. But before we leave off the subject of Ms. Fox Kennedy, John McGuire, a former CIA officer who became known for catching a spy named Harold Jim Nicholson, spoke in favor of Ms. Fox Kennedy. Quote, she's infinitely qualified for the job, unquote. He said, she's a very talented woman, unquote. Well, I bet she is. And Tulsi Gabbard is a really talented woman as well. She is a China hawk, not surprisingly. And Trump's appointment of her, I am sure, whether or not she gets confirmed, has to do with the anti-China phalanx that has been put together and is being ramped up from one administration to the next in this, quote, democracy of ours. Now, speaking of Elon Musk, something of a transition to our next series of articles. This also from the New York Times. This from December 20th of 2024. That's yesterday. This by Christopher F. Schutze, S-C-H-U-E-P-Z-E, and Mark Lambert, L-A-N-B-E-R. Musk expresses support for far-right party in Germany's election. Elon Musk, the world's richest man and a close advisor to President-elect Donald J. Trump, on Friday endorsed Germany's far-right party, a group with ties to neo-Nazis whose youth wing has been classified as, quote, confirmed extremist, unquote, by German domestic intelligence. Quote, only the AfD, that's the Alternative for Deutschland, can save Germany, unquote, Mr. Musk posted to X, referring to the anti-immigrant party, the Alternative for Germany, by its German initials. In doing so, he is waving into German politics at a moment of acute turmoil, and at the very same time, he has wielded his influence in Washington to help blow up a bipartisan spending deal that was meant to avoid a government shutdown over Christmas. The German government recently collapsed, resulting in early elections, which are planned for next year. News that members of the AfD attended a secret meeting with the Austrian extreme-right provocateur Martin Sellner, who was admitted to once being a member of a neo-Nazi group and has called for deporting migrants en masse, led to a large protest early this year. By the way, he also, Martin Sellner, is in the orbit of those who have whom we spoke about in For the Record programs 1355, 1356, 1357. He is in the remigration orbit, the Trump circles remigration orbit. So again, this should not be surprising. News that members of the AfD attended a secret meeting with the Austrian extreme-right provocateur Martin Sellner, who has admitted to once being a member of a neo-Nazi group and has called for deporting migrants en masse, led to large protests early this year. Then, starting in May, a leading member of the party was twice given a hefty fine for using Nazi-era slogans during campaign stops. Last month, in the eastern state of Saxony, police arrested 8 people suspected of being members of what they called a right-wing extremist terrorist organization, which they had said had been plotting to overthrow the government. 3 of the 8 were AfD members. 1 was an elected official. And talk about hypocrisy here. But, you know, again, this is Washington we're talking about. It also echoed in Washington where Democrats and even a few Republicans raised alarms, pointing out Mr. Musk's heavy influence on Mr. Trump. Speaking of the AFP, River is a neo-Nazi party, not even joking, unquote. Adam Kinzinger, a Republican former congressman from Illinois and longtime critic of Mr. Trump, posted on X. And Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, said in an interview with CNN, quote, this is not normal, unquote. He added, Again, quoting what Elon Musk thinks tends to eventually be what the president of the U.S. thinks. And if the U.S. takes an official position in favor of neo-Nazis in Germany, I mean, it is absolutely catastrophic, unquote. Again, where to start, where to end. The Third Reich, like Japanese fascism, was financed by Wall Street. We took in the big pop killers that we, the CIA was set up as a repository, as we looked at in a brilliant essay by the Berkeley researcher Peter Dale Scott called How Alan Dulles and the SS Preserved Each Other. The CIA was set up as a vehicle for importing the SS cadres that worked for German intelligence. And in an essay called the late Carl Oglesby that's available on the SpitfireList.com website from, for the record, from Covert Action number 35. The previous one is from number 25. According to William Corson, a former Marine Corps colonel who resigned his commission as protest over U.S.-Vietnam policy, and wrote a book called The Armies of Ignorance, he also became the advisor to the Truth Committee. And he is quoted as saying that the Galen organization was, quote, a front for the protection of Odessa Nazis. And we talk about that. The Nazi element in the Republican Party, it is fundamental. And we talked about Donald Trump. Donald Trump and J.B. Vance were both parroting the Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, are eating dogs and cats. That comes from a Nazi group, Blood Tribe, that marched in Springfield. And as one member of Blood Tribe noted accurately, in my opinion, this is real power, unquote. So again, the Department of Hypocrisy Department. And speaking of the AFP, from the Moon of Alabama blog from today, December 21st of 2024, insane anti-Muslim jihadist terrorizes Christmas market. And says, yesterday, Elon Musk lauded the German right-wing, but in my opinion, not radical AFP party, as the only one, quote, that can save Germany, unquote. A few hours later, a Saudi man living in Germany drove a car into a crowd attending a Christmas market in Magdeburg. Germans on Saturday mourned both the victims and their shaken sense of security after a Saudi doctor intentionally drove into a Christmas market teeming with holiday shoppers, killing at least five people, including a small child, and wounding almost 200 others. And, so skipping down. Before details were known, followers of the AFP and other famous anti-immigration politicians jumped onto the case with tirades against Muslims and immigrants. Unfortunately for them, the facts of the case were not in their favor. The culprit is neither an Islamist nor an illegal immigrant or asylum seeker. He is, in fact, a supporter of the AFP's and Elon Musk's opinions. Dr. Taleb al-Abu Hatmosan, a Saudi citizen of Shia heritage, had come to Germany 18 years ago to learn his medical specialty, psychiatry. He stayed in Germany and worked at a local mental hospital. And again, he is a supporter of AFP. One wonders if perhaps that psychiatrist wound up under mind control. Again, one another simply speculative. Skipping down again. He also accused German authorities of failing to do enough to combat what he said was the Islamism of Europe. Some describe him as an activist who helped Saudi women flee their homeland. He has also voiced support for the far right and anti-immigrant Alternative für Deutschland, or Alternative for Germany party. And again, that is something that is documented, talking about his social media posts. And that, again, is in the Moon of Alabama blog. I don't speak German, but one of his social media posts from June 18th of 2026. I and AFP are fighting the same enemy to protect Germany. So, again, a very, very interesting thing. I don't imagine we'll hear too much about that. But this is something of a pivot to our next focal point of discussion. In For the Record program number 1357, we read an article called Nuremberg on the Hudson about the Madison Square Garden rally that was held by Donald Trump roughly a week before the election and had all sorts of wonderful people, including Hulk Hogan and Tulsi Gabbard and Robert F. Kennedy present. And they were talking about Kamala Harris and her pimp handlers. Really quite remarkable. But I noted the author's observation that perhaps professional wrestling was not necessarily, he felt that was a good metaphor for the Trump administration. Now, Donald Trump has appointed Linda McMahon, the wife of Vince McMahon, and one of the entrepreneurs behind professional wrestling, to be education secretary. Again, that is very challenging for me because I have to avoid reaching into the foulest backwaters of my vocabulary to properly characterize that. But again, she is going to be education secretary, so perhaps we'll have professional wrestling as part of the mandatory curriculum for students around the country. However, there is an organization that is, in fact, poised to profoundly influence the curriculum of students around the country, and that is the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. We spoke about that in For the Record programs 1144, I think. Some of the programs that we've spoken about in connection with the Uyghurs, when we came back from 1179 and 80, I'll put links in the program. But from the Gray Zone blog of December 21st of 2019 by Ajit Singh, S-I-N-G-H, and Max Blumenthal of December 21st of 2019, China detaining millions of Uyghurs, serious problems with claims by U.S.-backed NGO, and far-right researcher, quote, read by God, unquote, against Beijing. That, quote, researcher, unquote, is Adrian Zenz. He is a senior fellow in China studies at the Far-Right Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, which was established by the U.S. government in 1983. The Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation is an outgrowth of the Captive Nations Committee, a group founded by Ukrainian nationalist Lev Dobryansky to lobby against any effort for détente with the Soviet Union. Its co-chairman, Yaroslav Stetsko, was a top leader of the fascist OUNB militia that fought alongside Nazi Germany during the occupation of Ukraine in World War II. He also was the head of state of the collaborationist government in Ukraine. Continuing. Together, the two helped found the World Anti-Communist League that was described by journalist Joe Comison as, quote, the organizational haven for neo-Nazis, fascists, and anti-Semitic extremists from two dozen countries, unquote. Today, Dobryansky's daughter Paula sits on the board of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. A former Reagan and George H.W. Bush official and signatory of the original Project for a New American Century document, Paula Dobryansky has become a fixture in neoconservative circles on Capitol Hill. Well, again, Paula Dobryansky, she also, by the way, headed up the Tibet desk at the State Department. And Adrian Zenz, in addition to being the disinfo king for the Uyghurs, is also somebody who now is a walking point for maintaining the, quote, oppression, unquote, of people in Tibet. Bear in mind that the Dalai Lama not only is inextricably linked with the CIA, his tutor and mentor was an SS officer, and he also was, and that SS officer also apparently worked as a source for the Galen organization, and he also is networked with a fellow who was a participant in the SS expedition to Tibet in 1939, and who was also a war criminal of the First Order. He had something like 100 ballpark Soviet prisoners of, quote, Asiatic, unquote, descent and looks, and had them killed via cyanide so that they could be preserved and studied for anthropological purposes. And that fellow also became a close associate of the Dalai Lama and was part of the Tibetan government in exile maintained by the Dalai Lama. I speak about that in Heinrich Harr, the SS officer who tutored the Dalai Lama in a series of programs, For the Record program. I think it is, I'll put the links. I think it's 547, 548, 549, and 550. I'm operating from memory. I'll put the links in the programs. But again, this is the organization that is the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Now, from Consortium News of December 18th of 2024, this is by Alan McLeod. U.S. Congress revives Cold War tactics with new anti-communism school curriculum. U.S. Congress revives Cold War tactics with new anti-communism school curriculum from December 18th of 2024. Congress has just passed a bill that will see the U.S. spend huge sums of money redesigning much of the public school system around the ideology of anti-communism. The, quote, Crucial Communism Teaching Act, unquote, is now being read in the Senate, where it is all but certain to pass. The move comes amid growing public anger at the economic system and increased public support for socialism. The Crucial Communism Teaching Act, in its own words, is designed to teach children that, quote, certain political ideologies, including communism and totalitarianism, conflict with the principles of freedom and democracy that were essential for the founding of the U.S. Although sponsored by Republicans, it enjoys widespread support from Democrats and is focused on China, Venezuela, Cuba, and other targets of U.S. empire. The wording of the bill has many worried that this will be a centerpiece of a new era of anti-communist hysteria, similar to previous McCarthyist periods. The curriculum will be designed by the controversial Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation and will ensure all American high school students, quote, understand the dangers of communism and similar political ideologies, unquote, and, quote, learn that communism has led to the deaths of over 100 million victims worldwide, unquote. No, it does not. It will also develop a series titled, quote, Portraits in Patriotism, unquote, that will expose students to individuals who are, quote, victims of the political ideologies, unquote, in question. We'll talk about some of the people who are elevated as heroes by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Again, co-founded by Lev Dobrianski, a key part of the OUNB milieu in the U.S., and again, someone who was part of a military intelligence unit that was helping to develop the martial law plans, according to Peter Dale Scott. We went into that in AFA program number 15. Came back to it in AFA program number 37. Now, we'll talk about some of the people they think are heroes. The next section of the Alan McLeod article is called A Discredited Book. The 100 million figure originates with the notorious pseudoscience text, The Black Book of Communism, unquote. A collection of political essays, the book's central claim is that 100 million people have perished as a result of the communist ideology. However, even many of its contributors and co-writers have distanced themselves from it, claiming that the lead author was, quote, obsessed, unquote, with reaching the 100 million figure to the point that he simply conjured millions of deaths from nowhere. By the way, that continues to be done, as we'll see. Its methodology was also universally panned, with many pointing out that the tens of millions of Soviet and Nazi losses during World War II were attributed to communist ideology. So it was the roughly 27 million Soviet military and civilian deaths were victims of communism, well, no doubt. This means that both Adolf Hitler himself and many of his victims are counted towards the vastly overinflated figure. The book was condemned by Holocaust remembrance groups as whitewashing and even lionizing genocidal fascist groups as anti-communist heroes. The principal organization promoting the 100 million figure today is the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, which has shown a similar level of both anti-communist devotion and methodological rigor. The group, set up by the U.S. government in 1993, added all worldwide COVID-19 deaths to the Victims of Communism list, arguing that the coronavirus was a communist disease because it originated in China. And again, there's some, you know, 7 million people, 1 point something million in the U.S. to make a very long story very short, the coronavirus did not come from China. It does come from the laboratory. The laboratory ain't in China and didn't bleep a week. I've done massive amounts of programming about that. Three long overlapping series of the For the Record shows. BioPsyOp Apocalypse now morphing into the Oswald Institute of Virology, in turn morphing into the Pandemics Incorporated series. By the way, I've condensed the material from those into a very important and readable article that is now available on my Patreon site. Again, I can't... not going to put that from behind the paywall, but again, all the information contributing to that is available for free. I've done it for years, and it will be available to the Patreon subscribers. Again, I can do much more on the Patreon level because I have 3 weekly talks, I can write articles, bi-weekly Zoom talks, than I can on these programs. Continuing, however, and overlapping the last little doozy. The group set up by the U.S. government in 1993 added all worldwide COVID-19 deaths to the victims of communism list, arguing that the coronavirus was a communist disease because it originated in China. It is these people who will be designing the new curriculum that will be taught in social studies, government, history, and economics classes across the United States. One of the central goals of the bill is also to, quote, ensure that high school students in the U.S. understand that one billion 500 million people still suffer under communism, unquote. This is a clear reference to China, a rapidly developing country that in just two generations has gone from one of the poorest on earth to a global superpower challenging and even surpassing the U.S. on many quality of life indicators. It also, by the way, is not, quote, communist, unquote. There are more billionaires in China than any country except for the U.S. It has a hybrid economic system. It is socialist in nature. The Chinese Communist Party does have ultimate regulatory authority, but it has very powerful business interests. And it basically is a hybrid system. Continuing, the bill goes on to detail how the school curriculum will, quote, focus on the ongoing human rights abuses by such regimes, such as the treatment of the Uyghurs in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, unquote, by the Chinese, quote, regime, unquote, and its, quote, aggression, unquote, towards pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong and Taiwan, who it labels, quote, a democratic friend of the United States. And again, Adrian Zenz of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an offshoot of the Catholic Nations Committee, is basically the go-to guy for the propaganda about the Uyghurs. And as we've looked at in the past, not only was Hong Kong a victim of a destabilization program by the U.S., but also the OUND milieu in the person of the GONOR organization, an NGO financed by the EU, that's G-O-N-O-R, and you have elements of, drumroll fanfare, the Azov Battalion, and white sector or party sector involved with the anti-Chinese demonstrations in Hong Kong. And it was they who gave Joshua Wong the Glory to Hong Kong template for the anthem for the, pro-democracy, unquote, protests in Hong Kong. And this goes on there. Furthermore, many of the victims, Alan McLeod, furthermore, many of the victims of Communism Memorial Foundation's witness project, unquote, case studies, likely the source for the Portraits and Patriotism series, are from China. This includes Rushan Abbas, the founder and executive director of the Campaign for Uyghurs, a pressure group funded by CIA front organization, the National Endowment for Democracy. Abbas was also previously employed as a translator at the notorious Guantanamo torture camp. And again, I would note that Tulsi Gabbard is a China hawk and very much associated with India. And this is really, really very, very interesting indeed. The rest of the article talks about Latin America as a model and the target. And then it goes on to skipping down in the article. And again, the entire article will be in the written description for the program. The imminent passing, this is called a new McCarthyism, the imminent passing of the crucial Communism Teaching Act harkens back to earlier anti-communist periods in American history, namely the Red Scare of the 1910s and the McCarthyist era of the 1940s and 1950s. During those times, organized labor movements were ruthlessly attacked. Workers from all professions, including professors, government officials, and teachers, were fired en masse, and some of America's brightest minds had their careers derailed due to their political leanings. This included singer Paul Robeson, actors like Charlie Chaplin and Marilyn Monroe, playwright Arthur Miller, and scientist Albert Einstein. The point of these operations was to break any opposition to the power of the state and big business and ensure that the U.S. maintained its capitalist course. Today, however, fewer Americans than ever are happy with the current political and economic system. 1977, Roy Cohn, chief counsel for Senator Joseph McCarthy during the McCarthy hearings, debates and talks about Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn was the political mentor to Donald Trump and was his first attorney. So it's really a new McCarthyism. Maybe it is not so new. But anyway, that is speculation by yours truly. We'll resume with this article in our next program. However, again, I want to note that the 64-gigabyte flash drive containing all of my printed and broadcast work and also the brilliant contributions of Terra Fractal and a mini-library of old anti-fascist books on easy-to-download PDF files is in construction. And I can't encourage people strongly enough to get that flash drive. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 4 years? Who knows how long I'll be around or how long the station? Who knows? But if you get that flash drive, then you will have a repository of arguably the best information about what happened to our civilization. And again, I get no money whatsoever from this. Again, it has all of my life's work. I'm now in my 46th year on the air. It is all available on that flash drive for a very small tax-deductible contribution. And again, I get no money whatsoever from that. We will be continuing with this article in our next program. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1366, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates Part 1. This is being recorded on December 21st of the year 2024. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.